This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton.
You're listening to the Knowledge at Wharton podcast. I'm Steve Sciarretta, Senior Managing Editor. And today we're going to look at how businesses can lend a hand in the wake of a disaster and avoid getting in the way by trying to be helpful, but also trying to score some positive public relations points. And we're going to speak about that with Wharton Management Professors Michael Yuseem and Tyler Rye, along with Luis Ballesteros of George Washington University. They have put together research that includes extensive data on over 74,000 donations made by some 34,000 corporations. Please explain why the idea of corporate crowding out this effect could be a worry when it comes to disaster aid. My guess is that most people would probably think the more aid, the better, regardless of the source. Luis, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think that you basically described the main motivation that we have when we start discussing about this study. Because on the one hand, we have this phenomenon that has happened in really in the last 10 years, where you have an increasing participation of for-profit organizations in disaster relief and recovery. And Tyler, Mike, and I started studying cases of disasters for which the largest proportion of aid was coming from business organizations, not the traditional providers like governments, multilateral agencies, NGOs. And the second part is precisely what you describe. There's a decrease in the relative participation of these traditional providers in disaster aid. And so this brings the question that the article is trying to answer. Is this better from the social point of view? Is this efficient for the affected country? Because one can argue that, as you said, we have more resources from firms. So regardless of who's providing the aid, it's better to have more money. But on the other hand, we have this argument that some providers that specialize in this type of activity, like multilateral agencies like the United Nations or government agencies like USAID, should be providing this action, and the affected community will be better off by receiving this specialized action. And at the same time, we have the business organization that obviously doesn't have normally this type of specialization in disaster relief and recovery. So that's precisely the question that we are trying to tackle with this study.
Let me dig into it a little bit more. So you've got, let's say, multilateral organizations who are questioning whether this outside aid from profit-making companies is helpful. What is their complaint? Is it, for example, I mean, I don't quite understand it. So if you're on the ground, the roads are already crowded, or there's not enough electricity, or there's limited resources, and they need to command them. What is it? What is this crowding out effect that you talk about in the paper?
I'll take a quick stab at that. This is Mike here. And if you think about, let's make it Walmart in, say, around Houston, when the several hurricanes came through a couple months ago, there's call it an hypothesis or an anticipated problem that if Walmart begins to, through its own distribution centers and its own trucking, to provide water and other relief supplies in the area, is there some chance that the local government will find reason to pull back because the private sector is going in? Then that effect may be less aid than were Walmart not to be there to begin with.
But or maybe not getting to all the right places as fast as it should.
And that's the second exact point, and that is a question of where is it going? And as Luis indicated, these companies that are already on the ground, like Walmart in that region, they often have a very good understanding of where the relief supplies are most in need.
Okay, and so so that's a case where they have a better idea, but it sounds like at least some agencies or some governments think that at times they're actually getting in the way. So do you have an example of where that happened, where, you know, they were crowding out and causing a bigger problem by entering the fray?
Yeah, so we have cases in specific disasters where organizations donate items that were not necessarily needed. But this is a problem that normally happens across disasters, and regardless of the source. And believe it or not, it's often more seen with donations that are coming from other governments. And this is very related with the fact that it's really difficult to understand what the emergency is, and in the sense that we don't know what are the particular needs of the victims. Oftentimes, governments don't come out with a list of the emergency items that are needed. And this is super important to really make the delivery of aid more efficient. So given that corporations normally are the first responders, at least is what we observe in our data set, they often mimic what other organizations have been doing. Mm-hmm. And so they provide aid that is not necessarily needed.
I see. So you could be in a situation where there's plenty of water to go around and not enough medicine, and if someone's like bringing in a lot of water, it's not helpful.
That's right. That's right.
And here's an example that we saw in Chile that had a terrible earthquake back in 2010, an 8.8 on the magnitude, what they call the moment magnitude scale. And the government was extremely hard-pressed to get roads going again, get telecom back up, and children back into schools. And so in a couple regions, some of the large local mining companies that have lots of equipment, they can build buildings pretty quickly because that's what they do. These mining companies stepped in and on their own, private companies began to construct schools and housing for victims of the earthquake in a region. And on first glance, that can look like a crowding out because the government then didn't do that in that region. But it had the net effect of allowing the government of Chile to put its limited resources into other regions. And thus, overall, if you look in a too micro way, it can look like there's crowding out. But what we find is that that as government comes in or as the private sector comes in, it does not lead the other to kind of just throw up their hands and walk away from the circumstance.
So it sounds like at a minimum that some close coordination would be a good thing. We're going to get to your other findings, your conclusions of the paper, which look at when a company can be helpful, what qualities it takes for them to be most helpful. But before we get to that, maybe Tyler, you can take a crack at this one, because I know that the other thing that you mentioned in the paper is that the overall costs of disasters is growing, which is an important thing to take on board here, because you note that between 1990 and 2015, the costs for floods, hurricanes, and earthquakes have gone up 600%. That's after accounting for inflation, to some $300 billion. I think that number is for the U.S., which is interesting because I think with the hurricanes and fires in California that we know about, that's cost estimates have been about $300 billion for those. So that's a big factor that this is growing so much. And so what you're talking about, what you're addressing in this paper, becomes even more important. Can you address that a little bit, Tyler?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. The scale of the need, it's rising dramatically. And when you look at the ability of, you know, traditional actors to respond to this, you know, they really don't have the capacity. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that really motivated us to look at the question of what does corporate aid do when it hits the ground in these situations. you know, the only enterprises that have the kind of capital to respond on that scale are corporations. And so really understanding the contributions they make or the situations where they might be, you know, crowding out or, you know, working across purposes with others is something that's really fundamentally important to understand. And like you say, with the number and scale of the disasters, even just in the United States in the past 6 months, this becomes a really prescient question. And so I think that the research, you know, really gets at an issue that we need to understand deeper and at least give some top-line indication that, you know, corporations, despite some of the theory that, you know, might suggest they're not the perfect tool for doing this, actually do more good than they do harm.
So the flip side of that coin is that while the overall costs of disaster have been growing, while this need is rising, traditional sources of aid have shrunk. But as you mentioned, corporate sources are increasing. In fact, I think in your paper you show, going back to that Chile earthquake in 2010, that business supplied 55% of international aid. And after the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, which was 2011, businesses accounted for about 68% of foreign assistance. And so that trend is already well underway. And so what you're saying is that this can be largely a good thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Okay. So let's turn to some of the things that your research has uncovered. I just wanted to cite one other example because I thought it was sort of interesting and symbolic of it all, where in addition to the Chile mining company, you note that after the Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004, which killed 200,000 people, that... well, maybe, Mike, you can say what happened after that with Coca-Cola.
Sure. It's a nice illustration of the essence of what we're seeing, which is in one region with the terrible earthquake and tsunami coming out of Aceh, Indonesia, countries throughout around the Pacific, including Sri Lanka, India, Thailand, and so on, were hit very hard. And in Sri Lanka in particular, Coca-Cola was on the ground and was already bottling there, and it simply stopped bottling Coke and began to put water in its bottles. And because it could do that very quickly, despite the earthquake and its damage, and because Coke had trucks for delivery, that's what they do, Coke could quickly, without an instruction from any government authority whatsoever, quickly did, in fact, fill in what it could do well because it was already on the ground. And I think that's the bigger point, and I'll turn it over to Luis on this, that I think is most striking for us from this research, which is that if you look at what the World Bank refers to as its Human Development Index, in the wake of disasters around the world, this is what we find with companies stepping forward. The net effect, taking everything into account, is for the country that's receiving that kind of corporate, along with all the other kinds of aid, those countries or those disaster regions in countries tend to recover more quickly.
So that's a key thing. And Luis, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the most important finding that we have, mm-hmm. obviously, because when we talk about this big disasters around the world, the main effect that normally has been observed by researchers in different fields, especially in economics, is that the country is going to be affected economically. So there is going to be a reduction in the productivity of the country, and over time a decrease in GDP. And we use a Human Development Index as a variable to understand what the effect is. In all cases, on average, we see that there's really a hit on Human Development Index after the disaster. And this is, again, in line with other researchers have found in the past. Now, we are trying to understand how the country recovers. And we're trying to calculate this recovery using two measures. One is the speed of aid, because experts in the area of disaster management mentioned that how quickly aid comes to the victims is going to be a factor of the long-run negative effect on the country. Mm-hmm. And the second part is really what's the ultimate trend of Human Development Index for the affected country. So as Mike was explaining, in both cases, we observe that if you control for a number of factors and try to figure out what's the ultimate effect of having more corporations helping the country recover by providing aid, that type of country that receives more aid from the business community is going to recover faster by looking at the Human Development Index.
Tyler, I think you also looked at what situations make it productive for corporations to come in. In other words, some guidelines that corporations can follow or governments and others can follow to determine when is it good for a company to come in. Can you talk about those guidelines?
Sure. So in general, I'd say that our research suggests that it's always, not always, but mostly good for corporations to come in. And theoretically, what we argue in the paper, and I think it bears out in reality, is that the reasons that corporations can have a positive effect on the economic and human recovery of a country after a disaster is because if they're on the ground, they can sense what's going on and really quickly see the areas of need, and they can also seize opportunities to respond. And in doing so, they have resources that are on the ground that they can repurpose for addressing the disaster impacts. So because they're close to it and because they have the ability and the motivation to address these harms, you know, we argue that this is why we see the effect that we do. So it's it's less a general set of principles about when corporations should come in or what they should do, but we do highlight, you know, the capabilities that they have on the ground that let them intervene effectively. But in addition to that, we find really strong evidence that if companies are using their existing resources, so they're giving aid that's related to things that they do already. So Mike mentioned the example of Coca-Cola switching their bottling lines in Indonesia from soft drinks to water and then using their own distribution network to get this stuff out. This is where we see a really pronounced effect. And I think this is surprising. It makes sense. So if you can take the experiences that you have as a company, the expertise, the routines that you've built up over a number of years, and deploy these for disaster aid, you're going to be in a real position to help.
One last thing is that we talked about how costs for floods, hurricanes, earthquakes have gone up 600% 1990 to 2015. And of course, part of that could be that, you know, a hurricane hits an area that's more developed. I guess this is true in Florida, for example. A city grew a lot. It's a fast-growing area. And so if you have the same hurricane, then you're likely to have more damage. But apart from that, like putting that aside for a moment, how much of this could be possibly attributed to climate change? And I leave that to whoever wants to jump in.
I'll take a quick swing at that. When it comes to natural disasters, let's say from earthquakes, that's obviously climate independent. But people who track storms, understand extreme weather, have generally said the last couple of years we have indeed seen more extreme weather, and then with rising sea levels, extreme weather coming into the, let's say, coastal U.S., whether the Gulf or, say, along Florida, with rising sea levels, the impact is going to be greater. And that's what, in part, got us to do this research, because, as you indicated at the outset, the impact of disasters of all kinds, including natural disasters of this kind, has been going up in recent years, and public aid has not kept pace. And thus, in our view, good thing that companies are beginning to jump in on all of the above.
I think one other thing is that when people talk about climate change, regardless of which side of the fence you're on, and talk about what should be done about it, and there's talk of, well, we should be making changes that would help to ease the effects of climate change and reduce carbon emissions and reduce the effects in the future and so forth. But then you'll sometimes hear that, well, you know, this is going to cost a lot of money, this is going to hurt businesses, this is going to be a negative thing for the economy net. But then, of course, you look at this kind of disaster money. We're talking about $300 billion in the U.S. alone. And, of course, not all of that's attributable to climate change. I'm not suggesting that. But it sounds like maybe some of it is. And so there's also costs associated with climate change. Are there studies out there that look at the net of, you know, here's the cost of mitigating, here's the cost of not mitigating, and here's the net result? And that would vary whether you're looking out, you know, 2 years or 30 years, obviously. But just in a general sense, does that get looked at?
You know, you raise a great question. And if you take it from a company standpoint, they do give substantial resources away. Costs them quite a bit in the wake of some of these disasters. And is there an argument for more preventive intervention by companies?
Yes.
To avert the disasters, and in fact, many companies, of course, have been stepping forward to sign some of these public documents, including one that the UN puts out that calls upon the company, if you sign it, then to take steps that are providing for a more sustainable world.
Now, let me complement that. I think obviously this is a very difficult question, and we don't have the data to answer it thoroughly. But just building on what Mike just mentioned is the opportunity cost. Like, you can somehow rephrase your question, say, what will happen if as society, as a global society, we can have those financial resources that had been invested probably efficiently, because that's what we saw with the study. And we hopefully are on track to really understand that having more corporations working on this field is beneficial from the social standpoint. But at the same time, we have more and more resources that have been invested in an activity that is not necessarily as productive as other type of activities. They are really related with industries and sectors of production. And obviously, the organizations have to make a choice in terms of investing all these resources either in their normal market operation or to help the market recover in the aftermath of all these disasters. So your question is really giving us an argument to say there's an option for us to start thinking about prevention and mitigation as a way to really be more efficient in the use of financial resources at the global level.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you. So Tyler, sorry, I didn't mean to take away a chance for you to respond if you would like.
No, I think Mike and Louise covered it perfectly.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for joining us today. I think it's an interesting discussion, and you can find more insights about global business from Knowledge at Wharton on our website, which is knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu. And you can also find all of our podcasts on iTunes. If you like what you hear, and even if you don't, please consider leaving us a review. Thanks, everyone.
For more insight from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.